Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
Hey, it's Aaron.
And it's Sia.
And before we jump into this episode of Innovation Calling, we want to make sure you know that you are invited, and we hope to see you at our next Women in Tech Leadership live podcast series. It's going to be May 7th. We are going to be at our home at City Central, once again with the 5:30 start time, free-flowing wine. We're going to have a time for networking, Q&A, plus, of course, our live podcast recording with Angela Tickner, who is the regional VP of just a tiny company that you may know called Salesforce. So this is just a really incredible opportunity to meet with other women and men. We've had men, right, Sia? Love the men who support us, but they'll be there too. So hopefully we'll see you on May 7th. And Sia, you're going to introduce our guest today.
Yes. So I actually have been following this particular individual for quite a few moon cycles. Let's not date ourselves again. But I want to introduce our good friend, Mr. Joe Sikora, VP of Sales and Channels at Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity and AV software, antivirus software, I should say. So Joe's been around for quite a bit. He actually is a serial entrepreneur at heart. And what he does is he goes into great organizations such as Bitdefender, and he just revamps their sales force. And let's just say he's got some war wounds, and we enjoy our time talking to him about his experiences in making great companies even better. So on that note, and without further ado, Joe Sikora at Bitdefender.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Greger.
And I'm Sia Yasotornrat. Today we are recording from not so sunny California. So what we are doing right now is we've got a wonderful friend of mine, Joe Sikora from Bitdefender. Welcome, Joe.
Welcome, Sia. Thank you, Sia.
Yeah, I don't feel very welcome. It's raining here, and it's supposed to be sunny.
But we got upgraded to a convertible.
Well, that's exciting, huh?
So yeah, it's always if the good. Sun comes out, we're ready.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing more pleasurable in life than sitting on a potentially leaky rooftop. We didn't bring umbrellas. And, going on wonderful meetings with great guys like you, Joe.
Well, thank you. Well, at least the drought hopefully is not going to be in effect this year. So we're actually happy about the rain this year in California.
I heard you recently got hail too, or snow up here.
We did. I've got a video. I'll show you later. It was crazy. of course, I just got a new car and it was outside and it was getting larger and larger. And the kids loved it. They thought it was a snowstorm. So we thought we were back in Tahoe.
Yeah, well, hopefully it was snow and not hail.
It was hail.
Oh, good times. Well, there's no big snows, all right.
Yeah.
So, on that note, Joe and I have known each other for a few years, and you can tell we know how to have real lame basic conversations with one another. But, Joe, we go back.
Way back.
Probably before a lot of people were born back, which is frightening when you think about it. But we know each other, full disclosure, since I was working at SonicWall, and Joe was a entrepreneur and had his own business, Interspace Computers.
Yes.
One of SonicWall's top partners back in the day. And so for me, it's kind of interesting to look at Joe's career. And, I've always fancied you as a solid entrepreneur. So seeing you go from Interspace to Fortinet to now Bitdefender, I'm really intrigued to hear about your story a little bit. So without talking about Bitdefender in too much detail, help me understand, how do you like it here?
No, love it here. Love it here. It's a very dynamic, high-paced environment. Lots of problems I get to deal with every day, but solving solutions. So it's as close to being an entrepreneur as you can get. And that's, for me, everything I've done in my career has always been an entrepreneur type field. So, and we definitely have it here at Bitdefender.
Well, and I always love to talk about this too, because 15 years ago, there's a very fine line. You were an entrepreneur or you worked in corporate.
Yes.
You did not cross paths. Like if you were an entrepreneur, you would never fit in corporate. Where I feel like corporations now are really looking at an entrepreneurial mindset and saying, okay, we want you in here. We're going to set you free a little bit to grow our business because we know we need you. And there's that blending of lines that I think is really cool. And it's awesome to hear a story. This is now your second corporation you've been working for after.
This is number two. And actually, there was one more company in between Interspace. I had a company too called Fortress that I was able to build and sell. So it was, it's been great. I've been very fortunate through the last 10 years on the commercial side, working for companies here in the Valley, and very fortunate during my entrepreneurial years as well.
So what's the big difference that you're seeing? I mean, you ran your own business, you actually sold your own business, and now you're part of a corporation and part of a funded organization, if you will. So what's the biggest difference that you see?
Oh, the biggest difference. Well, you know, with entrepreneurship, you have highs and lows. And I think the thing I don't have to ever worry about is the calls from my CFO saying, hey, we need another $100,000 to make payroll. Can you give me a check? You know, those were always good calls. But all reality, it is being able to forward invest in the right people, actually getting the talent on board and everything else is something that as an entrepreneur, typically, if you're self-funded, it's very difficult to forward invest, right? Because it's coming out of your own pocket. With a corporation like Bitdefender or my previous company I worked with, you know, these are all well-funded organizations who want to bring in top talent. So bring in that talent. Luckily, I have a lot of people in my network that I've developed through the few years of doing this. And that's probably the biggest difference.
Okay, I'm going to ask you something controversial.
Yes, good. It's about time. I know we're at least 5 minutes into it.
I know. Hey, you know what? I'm being good. I'm trying
Mr. Controversy. Go ahead.
Hey, by the way, so you talk about talent,
yes.
Right? You're in the Bay Area.
Yes.
There is a plethora of talent out here. It's almost to the point where it's overwhelming and too much. So, you know, when you're looking, I mean, I don't, maybe not necessarily at Bitdefender, but it could be anywhere.
Sure.
But if for you were to do this again and start your own business, you know, how would you look and define, you know, traits to bring on into your organization?
Mm-hmm. Well, so you're right. So there is a lot of talent, but I will say there's a huge shortage, right? So I've always made my career in cybersecurity. So I've been in cyber over 20 years now. And yes, I am dating myself. So in cyber, there's a huge, huge deficiencies both on engineering talent, cyber talent, and even sales talent. So the big struggle that I see every single day is with our partners and our resellers, like where I used to be, I don't think I could compete with the manufacturers, right? Because I know the salaries that we have to pay to get those aggressive type A's, right? So it's got a little out of control. You know, the traits that I look for are probably, I know it's always, I think, common sense, but, you know, A, I always still use the catchphrase, must be present to win, right? So it's people who want to show up for work and work, right? I typically put myself in places where they want hyper growth type stats. So we're never sitting still. So I want people to kind of fall in line with that as well. And it's also back to the point we talk about how it's blended. I look for people who are willing to do whatever it takes to win, right? And I'm not saying, you know, cross any lines. What I'm saying is, you know, an example I used to say is people ask me what I did. I was like, well, I'll take the garbage out if they want me to take the garbage out. It's kind of doing whatever it takes to do it. You know, it's all player coach. So most of the people I bring in management through the years, you know, either have done that or still working while they're managing. So that's just, I think, a formula that's worked for me. And those are the type of people that I look for. And of course, it's all, you know, you surround your people, the best people you can and you can afford, because that's how you're going to be successful or not successful.
So, okay. So you're intriguing me on this then.
Okay.
You got super aggressive, you know, personality types, those that have a strong desire for success, for whatever it is, whatever position it might be. And it usually takes a certain type of personality.
Yes.
There are theories around management where when you're assembling a team, you should have different types of personalities to kind of counteract and balance one another.
Sure.
So when you have such a hyper growth and driven org, how do you manage those different types of personalities? Do you tend to attract a very specific personality type? And how do you bring on the others that maybe, let's say, you described extroverts, aggressive personalities. What if you have an introvert that's extraordinarily solid,
still,
but they're not the
look at me, rah-rahs.
Well, you're going to need a balance of everything, right? So I've always, even going back to my entrepreneur days, I always, you know, there are profiles that you can take, right? Tests and everything else will teach you or at least make you aware of the traits that a person is born with. So I'm a firm believer you can't change that. So what I do is I basically pair people up, strength and weaknesses, rather than taking someone who I may not ever be able to teach something differently to, I'll pair them with someone that has strengths. So it is this balance, right? And in kind of how that balance work is, it's very important to the success or failure of an organization. You're right. I can't go hire a bunch of aggressive type A salespeople with no strong operations, finance, and everything else because they will get out of control. Right. And you're also dealing with people that are on the verge of, you know, you again, without that control or some type of limitations, you've got to do that. But that's where different management styles come into place as well. I'm a firm believer in removing barriers so people can succeed. So a lot of if you were to attend any of my management calls on a weekly basis, I start out with give me your highlights, your three highlights of the week. But also, what do you need? What do you need? What are the top three things I can do for you to help you succeed more, right? And that's just a different way that that I've approached. It's a very entrepreneurial way. Yes, we do a lot of sales training in some of the sales theories out there. We still apply those. And we build those into processes in Salesforce and everything else to help automate things as much as possible. I'm a big let's get the job done is the most efficient way. So I'm a big process numbers guy. So I want to take a look at how can we make this process better to make it easier for our partners, easier for our salespeople, easier for all the employees. So hopefully that answered your question because it takes a whole tribe, if you will, to be successful.
Right. Well, working with the channel, that is all sorts of different personalities.
Yes.
And they themselves are entrepreneurial leaders who have their own perception of how they want to work with a Bitdefender. And mm-hmm. how do you balance that between your company's goal in hyper growth? Because you guys are looking to increase your revenue significantly over the next year or so. How do you match that? And how do you manage your top partners who may or may not agree with your method or path that you're taking?
Sure. Well, I think there's always different paths, right? There's to any solution, there's different paths. So when you look at most of the channel partners out there, you're right. You deal with all different types. You deal with types that are very technical. The typical technical person who started their own business, they may not know a lot around sales structures or channel structures or how to run a business around finance, but they understand the technology piece. You have others that are very strong on the business side that don't understand the technology piece. So you have to kind of adapt when you're talking with partners and developing programs. So we actually sit down with them. We put together full business plans. So we help them if they need help. And if they already are very good at that, we see how we can plug into their plan. And it's making them a better business, right? I've always used a lot of common sense, to me at least. So a lot of times we do step back and we say, okay, what makes sense and what's fair for the salesperson or the channel partner? And we can all exist, right? So that is where we kind of just say, okay, let's roll up our sleeves and find a solution for everybody that works. And luckily, I've been able to balance that. It's all about, I know you probably hear all the time, it's all about relationship, but it is all about relationship. I'd much rather meet someone face to face, shake their hand, and work something out. And the same thing, if there is a problem, I don't run from those. I run to those because it gives us a chance to shine. And if we can give someone a solution, they're going to be a partner for life. So
you were just about to go into my next question. I don't know
you
if you're
like
reading.
That? I am.
My eyes were like daggering. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. It's all about relationships. So talking about, again, the channel.
Yes.
Do you find the most successful channel partners are the ones that have the strongest relationships or relationships with the vendor, or they happen to have very strong relationships with customers, but a meh relationship with the vendor?
I think the most successful ones have it on both sides, right? So, it used to be, I think on the manufacturer side, and again, I've been on both sides, so it's a very unique position I'm in. But, you know, on the manufacturer side, we all want a partner to be very loyal to us and only sell our solution. That's not reality, though, right? The reality is they need to do what's best for their clients and for their business. So once you get over that hurdle, right? It's fairly simple. We can all coexist. There's plenty of business out there. At the end of the day, those partners have relationships with the end users, and that is probably the most important thing. Because when I had my managed services company, I was an extension of my customer. I was not an extension of my manufacturer. I did maintain very close relationships with manufacturers that fit into my solution. So that back when we met, right, that was, you know, that was one of my, one of the brands and solutions that I built a business around because it was right for my customers. So, you know, that's, it is that balance.
So I want to switch to, or unless, Sia, did you have more questions about the channel?
I do have one more.
Okay, sure. Ask one more. And then
I do. And this is just channel, because that's our history. So no, I kind of want to dig in. And I haven't seen you in a long time to really, well, let's be honest. Every time I had a chance to have a conversation with you, we might have had a few glasses of wine in hand. So
maybe.
You can,
can't remember all of them.
You can imagine our memories of those. But the channel programs or channel that exists today, I have not been in the channel in a decade, pretty much since we last talked. I moved away from that channel management role. Has the value of the channel increased, decreased over that last 10 years or so?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. And depending on which industry and who you talk to, you'll get a different answer. I think the value of the channel is as strong as it's ever been. Now, the channel has changed, though, right? So you've seen a shift into managed services and monthly services versus we used to always, you know, sell a product, sell a SKU. How many years can I lock you in for? So now that's just not the way the market is. So I have seen a big shift towards, you know, managed service partners, managed security service partners. And, you know, that's one of the things that we did here is in January, I combined our MSP program with our standard channel program and merged the two into one. So it is a little bit forward thinking. And most people are like, well, yeah, that just makes sense. But that tears down all the barriers, because a lot of times the reason why you saw a silo or a fight between the different groups is because of compensation on the manufacturer side, right? So if I'm paying my my team on only a certain type of business, they're going to do whatever they can to shift that business and make it fit. So by tearing down those walls, we're going to do what's right for the partners, do however the consumers or partners want to consume our solutions is how we're going to offer it. And that is, I mean, again, back to simple business 101 type things. That's an approach we take. I think the channel in a few years from now is going to all be hybrid or MSP, and the traditional reseller is probably going to have a really, really tough time if they're still around, right? That's kind of what's happened in the marketplace.
And I see that. You kind of saw that writing in the wall 10 years ago. Is
sure.
If you were going to rely on a hardware sale with warranty or whatever, the margins are so razor thin.
Sure.
Enough as it is, and you can only, you know, squeeze so much blood out of a turnip. Mm-hmm. So thanks for kind of updating me and your thoughts on that, because I was just curious to see how you know, the state of the channel is today. So
state of the channel.
State Absolutely. Of the channel. So Aaron, that was my.
Well, I was going to switch. So as we talk about the state of the channels, I wanted to switch to the state of cybersecurity.
Sure.
Because you've been working on this for a while. We talked a lot before we started hitting record about Bitdefender and really what sets you apart. Can you talk a little bit about where cybersecurity is now and go into Bitdefender specifically and what intrigued you about this company and why you came to it?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think the state of cyber is ever changing, and I think it will continue to change. You know, we are still, you know, if you read a lot of different things, it's still Moore's Law, right? So things are happening faster and faster. So zero-day exploits or exploiting an operating system is happening at record rates.
I can't imagine trying to keep up with it. I mean,
well, you can't. So that's when you have to develop technology that is as smart as you can, along with automation, right, and machine learning. So, but the whole thing is it'll continue. The number of devices that we're adding that are connected onto the internet is crazy, right? So if you look at IoT, if you look at mobility, I think the average number of devices nowadays, it's what, 2.5 or even 3 devices per person. I know personally I have, I don't know, 6 or 7, right?
Yeah.
If you count the cars, they're all connected too. So, you know, that is going to continue to increase. Because it's easier for consumers and businesses to do business. Well, that's great. And I think all of us know that we can't live without the internet, but there are, and I think a lot of it's education too, because we went through a period where people are like, hey, this email, I won the lottery. Let me click on this. deal. I think everyone now is like, okay, wait a second. Too good to be true. I'm not going to click on this. But on the manufacturer side, we do everything we can to eliminate as well. We've seen a spike, of course. Malware is not going away, right? And ransomware and all these different things. You know, it was just, we just had RSA, which was a couple weeks ago, right? Which is the big security, cybersecurity conference in San Francisco. We, you know, it's still every year the number of solutions and people going to that conference grow. It's amazing. And it's not going away. Specific to how we do things differently mm-hmm. here. And one of the reasons, one of the main reasons I am here is because of the technology. So Bitdefender is, it's an older company established. It's about 18 years old. We have more managed active endpoints. So we're talking mobile, desktops, the whole shebang. We're almost up to 600 million. So wow. We see more big data than anybody else. And that's why we're known for very high stop rates. But we also roll in machine learning. We have some AI type stuff. And we have some new advanced, I guess, warning systems, if you will. So it's not if you'll get... infiltrated, it's when. Again, you can always get in. So you have to have things in place to make sure that you mitigate that as best possible. So but that was one of the big things here at Bitdefender. It's a technology company for sure. We have technology that's very unique and that type of stuff. If I can bring that to partners and end users that I've worked with for years, it's the best solution for them. It really is.
So the machine learning, I don't know yes. how much you can divulge, but... So it's just the machines are getting smarter about how to protect your consumers or?
Well, so machine learning is obviously the whole concept of machine learning. The more or longer you've been mm-hmm. doing it, the better it gets, right? I think we all know that. And that goes into AI and everything else. So machine learning, we've been doing that for about 9 years now.
Wow.
So we've been actually doing it longer than anyone else in our industry. We've just done I'm not going to say a poor job, but we haven't done a great job marketing it, right?
So improve.
We can always improve, always improve marketing and messaging because, again, things that we take for granted in our threat research and everything else, that is kind of like sandboxing, right? Who would have known that sandboxing would have been such a big standalone market until someone threw a lot of money marketing it and say, okay, well, sandboxing. We've been using sandboxing forever.
What's sandboxing?
Sandboxing is taking a exploit, exploding or letting it run and see what happens. And then it's like in a virtual environment. So you can okay. take a look at it, see what it does, and then say, okay, that's bad. We don't want to open that in the real world. But those are things that, you know, in the past we have maybe overlooked and said, okay, this isn't a standalone product. So we are seeing some things like that come into play. It's all about a shift in the market too, to effectiveness. So if you look at security in general, we always had customers that were check the box right through the years. It's like, okay, for compliance, I checked the box. I have it. Is it effective? I checked the box. Right now, people, A, because of auditing, but also because of things are happening in cyber, they want not only check the box, but if I'm paying for it, I want it to be work. I want it to work and I want it to be effective. So that is how Bitdefender has experienced so much growth as far as we have. We have very effective products out there for stopping those things.
So I read an article the other day about the emergence of IoT, how it's growing exponentially, but I hardly ever hear about the security component of it. So I've argued that IoT is sexy. It excites everyone. Everyone has accessibility to whatever device that's connected. Do you think cybersecurity has a branding problem when it comes to IoT as being the poo-poo of the party, if you will, the poo-poo of the party?
No, I don't think it has a brand. Well, so first of all, IoT has been around for a while, right? It's just now... I liked it because you pointed at your bottle. And I was wondering if your bottle's IoT enabled, but it isn't.
Not yet.
You know of.
But, you know, look at our everyday life, right? I'm sure, I don't know about you, but I have, everyone I think has a Google or Alexa, right? Controlling our houses.
Sia.
Oh, not Sia.
You know my household.
That's for, okay. All right. You're right. So, but still, lights, doorbells, video cameras, everything is IoT, right? Refrigerators, cars, everything. So it's very convenient. I think in our world, we just have to put in protection to make sure that we're applying some of the cyber things to devices without operating systems. So going back to some of the reasons about why I came here is because we have those solutions, right? We go below operating system, which is very unique. So it'll become more and more relevant. For IoT specifically, like at your house, we have a device called the Box, right? And I know this isn't a commercial, but you know, we've been doing that now for years. And we're actually on our second version. And it's a little device that you go in and literally it's on your phone. You can look at input, output, what's going on. Are there anybody attacking my thing? And it's funny, the one of at the beach house, I saw this spike in traffic. And obviously, we're only there usually on the weekends. And I'm like, okay, why am I running 10 gigs a day of data, right? Ooh. Or what's going on? So I had to investigate that. And there was...
What was it?
You
can't leave
it hanging. I know.
Well, there was actually some updates going on anyways, we'll say nothing.
So it wasn't somebody trying to hack
no,
in?
It wasn't. But you get those alerts too, right? So you can see everything going on all your devices, even if it doesn't have an operating system. So that's kind of cool. And I think we'll continue to develop solutions like that.
So you know, you're giving me two questions then.
Okay.
So
two for one.
A twofer. Yeah. So we had a previous conversation with another individual on a podcast about corporate responsibility when it comes to security. Mm-hmm. And the second part of it was the fact that how much is corporate responsibility held accountable for our securing our data? But secondly, how much are we responsible for our own data and securing ourselves? So with the solution that you have at Bitdefender, is this something that you guys, is it a commercial grade product or is it a consumer or is it a something where in your managed services, it's a business grade that you're just like?
No, it's both, right? So, okay. So we are unique because we do have a consumer division. We have an enterprise division, which is what the division I'm on. And then we have OEM and tech licensing. So no, we have solutions for both, right? And they all integrate. So when you look at different things and back to the question around governance, compliance, and everything, I think it's everyone's duty, right? Because education has always been what stops most of the bad guys, right? If you just think twice, you know, if you get an email, if you're at a corporation, you get an email from the CEO that you normally don't communicate with, and it's some kind of squirrely message, but looks okay.
Hey, Bill Gates is giving away whatever.
Or
Zimbabwe.
Right? Yeah. I mean, Zimbabwe is pretty legit too.
Yeah. We've heard all that. There's lots of stuff, but you know, don't click on the link, right? Or don't provide, or better yet, don't provide information that doesn't feel right. If it seems too good to be true or doesn't feel right, it probably isn't. So that education piece is something that we all need to kind of participate in. And we're all liable for as far as corporate governance and everything else. It depends. I mean, the world today is privacy is huge, and we can all, you know, you can either Google or open the newspaper if you still read the newspaper and see all the stuff going on with privacy. But that is where the market shifted, right? It's no longer some of the most wealthiest companies here in the Valley own nothing, right? They own data. Yeah. Or information. So, it's definitely changed. So it's more important than ever that everyone get educated and learn what they need to do and do their part.
But to see as quite, and this is what we were talking about. Like we talked, Marriott was the example we used.
Sure.
Okay. 7 years ago, 5 years ago, if Marriott would have, I literally couldn't get into my American Airlines account because of the Marriott breach had affected my Air American Airlines. I had to change all this stuff. Pain in my butt. Like, oh my gosh. Yet, going on a trip, let's go to Marriott because that's what I know. Like, I'm not even upset. So from a perspective of we've become numb to these security breaches,
sure.
But are corporations doing enough? Do you feel they're doing enough on the cybersecurity backdrop? Or is it one of those things like, let's hope it doesn't happen. Yeah, we know it's going to happen. So what's their responsibility in it from?
Well, so first of all, I think we have as a society accepted it, right?
Yeah.
Look at like our credit cards, right? How many times have you like, yep, someone stole my credit card number. It's fine. Just give me a new one and we know we're going to get credit. So at least, you know, I think if we didn't get credit for it, then you'd have a bigger problem. And more importantly, some of the very sensitive information, for example, healthcare records and things like that, then people start to really get, I'm not so happy about this anymore. So we can always do a better job. And the Marriott thing is a good example. There's been so many breaches over the years. And it's not like these organizations don't have full-time security staff in place. They have probably the best technology in place and everything else. It's back to my another point is it's going to happen. right? But how you do it and how quickly you mitigate this is, you know, that's the big issue. So that's where they can improve. They can either go to a third party through a service, or, you know, some manufacturers like ourselves, of course, we offer some of these services as well. But it's okay, realizing that, yes, we do have something bad going on. We are breached. Now, how do we react to it? So that's kind of this new market emerging, right? So if you look at that, if you look at the like network traffic analytics, the NTA space, right, which is a space we just got into last year, that's probably one of the hottest spaces out there, because literally what we're doing is we're looking at traffic as it goes through to say, is this good? Is it bad? And more importantly, if something's bad, how bad is it, and how do we shut everything down, right? So that's something that always needs to be improved. And again, if you're not doing your updates, if you're not, you know, it goes back to your policy too. So most of the time, this isn't a technology problem. It's a people problem, right? And the more we can help make sure, I mean, I think in all security, utopia is getting a true security breach or risk in front of a person to do something about it. That's our goal. Right. Yeah. How do we do that for you, or somehow automate to say, hey, we stopped this, but you still need to check it out. Something's not right. We're getting closer to that. I mean, it's an ongoing battle, but yeah, it's you definitely need to stay current. And again, educate. If anything, I'd say provide more education to all the employees working there too, because we could put everything in the world. But if someone internally clicks on the wrong email and gives them access because we have to give them access, that's where it all goes wrong. I can't stop that.
It could be argued, like, again, humans will always be the weakest link no matter what, because someone could be always social engineered, right? I mean, no matter how many gateways you put in the way.
Yes.
And I think you had a point there I really want to emphasize, and I really like it, is things will happen.
Yeah.
Things will hit the fan.
Yes.
The question is, how quickly can you mitigate it? How quickly can you lessen the disbursement of whatever hit the fan?
Absolutely.
Right.
That is, well, and it's, you know, but that's true in many different industries. If you look at, I don't know, car alarms, if someone wants to break in your car, they'll still crack the windshield or the window, get in and take your car. You could put other things in place. You could put, I don't even, you know, all the different things they have, but at the end of the day, they can probably still get in there and get it if they really want it. Now, if I'm a car thief, what I would do is I'd look for the car without the alarm on, or the car without. And so, again, easier targets. And that's the same thing with cyber.
Interesting.
It's a lot of fun, cyber, talking about security.
Cyber.
Yes. So help me understand. So I'm curious about just security in general. How would you define the difference between now versus 10 years ago as far as the sophistication of attacks?
Well, I mean, obviously sophistication continues to increase. If you go back 10 years ago, the emails that we're getting that were spoofed, if you will, that weren't, you know, the ones, I think there was a bunch around eBay and things like that, they look bad, right? They
look like obvious. Someone,
it was very obvious. It's like you didn't, you could look at it. Yeah. Misspell it. I mean, so now things look really good. To the point where, you know, we've seen people set up, you know, web presences and everything else that are almost identical. So they've done a lot better job. You know, so it has become more sophisticated as far as the quality. As far as some of the things they're using to get in, a lot of it is still the same old exploits, right? They find a vulnerability, they found a way to exploit it, and it's a lot of stuff is still arriving via email or social engineering. So, but it does look better, right? It looks a lot better than it used to. So it is, and what they're doing with it too, you know, if you look at, you know, we did a talk, gosh, it was last year, 6 months ago, on cryptojacking, right? So kind of the new, and I don't know if you guys are in the know with cryptojacking, but the whole idea of using, basically stealing computer resources. So now it's not even they were trying to get your information or your bank accounts or that type of stuff. How they're getting paid is using resources on your computer to mine crypto, right? Which translates to dollars. So all of a sudden, everything is working slow on your network or your computer, or something's going on. You don't even know what's going on in the background. Okay, well, all of a sudden, someone could take that and turn that into some type of currency. So, you know, it's, you want to talk about a smart way to do it? Sure, because then you're really not stealing anything but resources, which is still illegal and wrong. But, you know, it's a very It's a very different way to do it than I just locked your computer down and now you hold a ransom and you need to pay me, right? So, but also those things are too with IoT. Another example, and this is an older one, but you know, with all the hotels going to electronic, right, opening doors and everything else, just think about it. It's also a convenience thing. So now the bad guys would be able to say, okay, well, your key doesn't work now. Okay. And they send you a text message saying, okay, well, if you want to open your door, it's $10. I don't know about you, but maybe it's a big pain to go downstairs and I don't have my ID or something like that. I'm going to pay them $10 just so I can get in. So it becomes this convenience factor. And so we're starting to see things like that become more relevant where it's much more sophisticated, but it's also lower dollar because there is a threshold on dollar amounts where it's kind of like, okay, well now it's not worth my time.
Right.
So I will just go ahead and brush it off and say, whatever, let me do it. So, you know, that's some of the things that we've seen that have changed.
So how do you stay though? And I'm thinking of an interview we did with another guy. He talked about like hiring people and being able to, I'm going to totally butcher this phrase,
it's okay.
But hire where the hockey puck is going versus where it is. Right.
Ooh, yeah.
So how do you know, from the cyber or the blockchain example,
yeah,
how do you stay above it in a cybersecurity perspective versus constantly reacting? How the hell can you predict some of this stuff to say, okay, crypto is coming in place. We see this coming. I bet you we're going to have to watch out for this because they could be doing this versus, like, not that you're clueless, but, oh, I didn't even see that one coming. This is a new one we have to figure out.
That's why they pay us the big bucks. No. In all reality is kind of, you can see things happening, right? Mm-hmm. So my example on cryptojacking, nothing's different, right, than us stopping the bad guys before, except for, you know, people that didn't have some type of security on their PCs or servers. You know, they didn't see it. They didn't know what's going on. So it's the same thing. So these are a lot of fundamentals that we've used for years and years. So it's not necessarily, yes, there is something shiny new always going to happen that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as keeping your – getting – you know, no one's able to predict the future.
Right.
There are some things that we can tell you that – I will tell you that more devices we put on, more exposure, and it's going to become bigger and easier to do, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, for the most part – you know, it's just taking a step back and kind of applying some common sense to things. So we can see trending, we see analysis, and we know the attacks are going to be more sophisticated, but the way that we stop them or come up with it, our methodologies have been consistent, right? So, and it's adding the resources, basically not being under resourced too on our side. So most of our employees here, we have about 1,600, a very large percentage are engineers and threat intelligence engineers. So it's an investment we made. Some corporations invest a lot in sales and marketing, and they're selling dreams rather than solutions, if it makes sense. Mm-hmm. We've all heard those scenarios. We develop products and solutions that work. No, they don't sell themselves, right? Mm-hmm. But that is kind of a, it's just a philosophy that we've had. We've always been very, very strong in technology and engineering.
Everything you're
speechless.
Saying is you are, and this is
just drop.
By the way, very rare to get me speechless. So good job, Joe.
I try.
I think that's why they liked having you hang out with me. I think oftentimes I would just be speechless. No, but I think security has always been in such a great position, especially now. I think the technology of, again, I'm sorry, my experience with security is 10 plus years ago, but I think more now than ever, I think security has got to be blowing up right now. In all aspects, right?
I mean, security is in everything we do,
right?
Whether you're home, in your, it's everywhere, right? So some type of security or layered security is always needed. So those of us who have been in this for a while, because I know if you want to talk about crazy times. So when I first decided to get into security or cybersecurity was when things called high-speed internet connections were going to be put into homes. Yes, I'm dating myself. But still, the whole point of, okay, well, now they're going to come out with something called ISDN and this thing called DSL where we're going to make things cheaper. So now bandwidth is extremely high. Well, yeah, I mean, you can get a ton of bandwidth for very little money, right? So it's going to become faster. It's going to become cheaper, more resources. So again, we're just making this addressable space just bigger and bigger and bigger. So yeah, it just made sense. But that literally is, I was 20 years old, if that. And I
keep dating yourself. Keep going.
Keep on dating myself. And I said, I was like, okay, well, this just makes sense because this is going to be kind of how we're going to communicate in the future. So, so if you look at things like that, there's all kind of other stuff. Like if you ask me today, channel strategies and sales strategies, I've got three iterations ahead of where we are already built out. So I know where we're going to do. Now, I don't know maybe all the details because the market may shift a little, but I can tell you the overall coverage strategy and what we're going to do as a company as we grow, right? And I think any good sales executive or leader should have a plan like that. As a company, we have a five-year plan, right? So unlike some places, we have a five-year plan versus even a three-year plan that – will it be, it'd be interesting because we can come back in 5 years and we can say, okay, how was that 5 year plan? And I'll be like, hey, well, we took a turn here, here, and here, but we still kind of ended up where we are. Because things may accelerate, they may decelerate, but at the end of the day, you have to also be flexible enough to make those changes, yeah. Right? And that's why I like working for an organization like Bitdefender, because we think outside the box, right? And there's a lot of things we're doing. Even as a company, to look at how do we crowdsource, if you will, different problems that we're having, right? Taking people outside of our normal day-to-day jobs and putting different eyes on it. That's pretty cool. A lot of people aren't doing that. But as a company and being able to accept those changes, that's kind of philosophically pretty, pretty cool.
This is a total aside question, and I don't know how legal I'm allowed to say it.
Ooh, a legal question.
Well, because it doesn't have to do with HR. So
I love HR.
We all love HR is the best ever.
Yes.
So as we're looking at, as we are aging up and out, right? And the next generations come on board, they too will also become next generation consumers, next generation business leaders, et cetera. Because this group is growing up with everything being connected, with the expectations that there's going to be some semblance of personal information that's going to be out there no matter what.
Sure.
And whatever. Do you feel...
Usually they're posting it.
More than they should. Yes. Thank goodness internet was not around when I was younger. But anyway, we don't talk about that. Woohoo! previous employers know where you had nothing to worry about. Do you feel like, okay, security, it is needed as pervasive as it's going to be across all spectrums, all types of, users who use it for whatever various purposes. Do you feel like security is going to be, yes, it's needed, but less important in the eyes of the next generation?
Well, it depends on what security you're talking about. I think we all have, accepted the fact that, back to the example, we've accepted some things are just going to be out there. And you're right. There are a lot of things that used to be behind closed doors or private that people are very comfortable with putting on their social media wide open, right? So that has changed. But you're still going to need, I guess the big question is what happens when that service gets shut down? Okay, the sky's falling. What happened here? Oh, I just had a denial of service attack and the servers are down. Now I can't get on my app. So that's more of the relevance of why you need security. And then there's also the other stuff too, right? When you look at some of the malware things that are out there for businesses that basically take over a network, lock your data and say, pay me, right? Or I'm going the ransomware stuff, or I'm going to delete your data and not give it back. Again, it's not as a business owner, I would step back and say, okay, how much is my data worth? Okay, did I make backups and everything else? Or did I put things in place so this wouldn't happen? It's almost like an insurance policy, right? So, and it becomes a convenience because you're always going to need it. You're absolutely going to need it. And more importantly, maybe not the social aspect of the information if we don't value or... some of that private information, if we're okay exposing it, okay, great. But you still want to have those applications, those services and everything else working properly. So it becomes more of a, you want to, turn on the light switch and get lights, right? Type thing. So that's where security has to come into play and it'll always be there. It's not going away. I think the old days of security, we used to build things that were super, super secure, but then they slowed down the entire network or the user experience. And what did they do? Off, 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 off. Okay, now it's running right. Cool. I'm okay with it. They accepted the risk. So, you know, it's similar, but it'll be interesting to see kind of how the whole market changes with, you know, when my kids are old enough to hit the workforce and everything else. It'll be interesting. I think some of the fundamentals will still be the same as far as cyber goes, but you're right. I mean, you have to be able to shift with the market and in different ways to consume it. You know, I'm just still trying to become an influencer and get paid money just sitting back, just tweeting things, but I'm not there yet.
Start a YouTube channel. You'll be good.
I know. Talking about toys.
That's...
Oh, don't get me started on that.
That might be a good spot to end.
I'm like...
Joe opening toys.
I'm like despondent now. Where was that drink that you offered earlier? No.
Exactly.
So, no, this has been a really good conversation. And Joe, obviously, it's always nice to see you.
You too.
Such a plethora of wealth of information. Thank you very much. So, if anyone wants to learn more about Bitdefender or you, where can we get a hold of you?
Oh, I tell you what, the easiest is our website, bitdefender.com, easiest thing. As far as a hold of me, LinkedIn, that's probably the easiest, right?
Quick question on that. How much do you like, have you guys noticed an increase of LinkedIn being used and adapted as a viable social media platform for business?
I think so. And I think it has been. It's funny too, because you'll always see people posting things like it's Instagram or Facebook, yeah. And that's not accepted. And I think everyone says not acceptable. But yeah, I think that's definitely how I connect. Having a global role too, working across time zones and everything else, it's the best way that I connect with people still. Is definitely good old LinkedIn for sure.
So have you, you just got me another train of thought and I'll end it. I swear to God, Aaron's like staring at me, which is, I notice a lot of LinkedIn conversations. It's almost like becoming a secondary email in a way for different types of conversation. Are you guys using it the same way?
Yes.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I'm talking to both of you. I'm just.
Or
yeah.
The world out there listening.
Yeah. Well, but going back to security then is. Are we just using it with the assumption that LinkedIn then is taking all the security precautions?
I mean, you're doing the same thing with Twitter, with Facebook, with Instagram. Yeah. Everything's got a messaging side to it, and you're messaging in 20 different apps.
So there you go. This might be a new business venture for everyone out there, is if we can consolidate all of my messaging.
We just talked about it.
Fantastic.
I'll give you the name of the company. I'll give you the name
of the company. Fantastic. There you go. There
That's
you go.
So funny. Yeah.
And I'll secure it.
Perfect.
Bingo. Well, I was just going to say, like, I don't know what you're talking about with DMs because no one ever slipped any DM to me.
You might have some there. You just don't
know.
Okay.
Wait, I'm not asking for it. So, Aaron, do you have any questions for Joe?
I do not.
Joe, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Go Bitdefender. I'm so eager to see you rock it over there.
Bitdefender.com. Woo!
And well, on that woo note, that will wrap it up for another episode of Innovation Calling.